You're listening to a Radio 1 91 FM podcast.
The government is set to disestablish the Broadcasting Standards Authority sometime in the next year. The media regulator, set up by legislation in 1989, has acted as an intermediary for broadcasting complaints and mandated that broadcasters, whether radio or TV, prioritise accuracy and balance in their news coverage. With most New Zealanders consuming media through web sources in the age of the internet, many have called the authority's purpose into question. But the debate of whether the Broadcasting Standards Authority needs reform to keep up with 21st century media habits or needs scrapping was answered last week when Communications Minister Paul Goldsmith came out saying that the BSA is not creating consistent outcomes for our media ecosystem. We have Dr. Olivier Joutel from the University of Otago's Comms Department, the Communications Film, Media Film Communications Department, to talk all about the BSA's demise and how it will affect the media landscape and if Aotearoa will now be outsourcing its journalists governance to American tech giants. Good morning to you, Olivier. How are you?
Morning. No. It's great to be with you, Zach.
It's good to have you on. I think you're joining the fourth timers club,
right?
Here on Breakfast. Not that I keep track.
No, that's cool. I'm happy to collect my challenge coin at the end of the program today.
There'll be many a challenge coin for you, my friend. Before we get talking about the BSA demise, I want to mention an actor, and I mean actor in the political sense, not film sense. Right-wing broadcaster Shane Plunkett and his ilk on their online media platform, The Platform, mm-hmm. have gone back and forth with the BSA for a while now. Plunkett really detests the Broadcasting Standards Authority and celebrated the announcement by saying it was good news for freedom of speech. What is the sort of role that he's played in its demise? Because it seems like he's been pretty aggro against the BSA.
Right. Well, I mean, it's for the young people out there, they may not remember that Sean Plunkett was a pretty normie radio broadcaster on RNZ for a time, on ZB also, I think, for a time. And part of, I guess, the right-wing shtick of essentially this kind of antagonistic relationship to a woke or a liberal media sort of elitist sort of object of hatred is getting somebody like a Sean Plunkett who used to be, quote, on the inside. You know, so we saw this. This is kind of like the origin story of Fox News and a guy like Bill O'Reilly, who was a very sort of mainstream broadcaster, to really sort of, quote, pull back the curtain and tell you how this woke mafia really works. Now, the other way that we have to think about Sean Plunkett and the politicians that appear on his program, the right-wing astroturfed lobbyists and pundits that are part of the sort of stable of platform guests, is that, I mean, essentially they're how do I put this? They're fundamentally trying to unpack journalism and the media industry as that something that sits within the purview of the state and regulators, and essentially it's kind of a reheating of the kinds of alliances that were behind the dirty politics scandal of the 2010s, in which bloggers and corporate lobbyists were running some very virulent attack lines against the very concept of government as part of a kind of long-standing project to, again, do away with whether it's journalism, academia, or people that work, ministerial staff who are in government, as any kind of check and balance on, yeah, the politics of the right, the politics of capital. And right now, the politics of capital is pretty unhinged, you know? So
pretty unstoppable.
Yeah. And and so I think this government, whether it's a one-term government or not, they're getting as much done as possible early on. Mm-hmm. And Sean Plunkett is a key sort of antagonist and messenger, and I mean, we can talk about this a little bit, but I think he's done a lot to sort of popularize the American notion of sort of online free speech as the only singular sort of concept with which to think about media. And when you do that, you're essentially, again, giving the regulatory power over our media and communication systems to American policy settings, right? Like, that's the sort of unspoken story here.
Yeah. It's interesting you mentioned that he used to be kind of a normie and now he's, a bit out there. Because the same thing could be said for Peter Williams, who runs Reality Check Radio, which is a
and
sort
Liz
of tangential
Gunn.
Thing.
Well, yeah, okay. Sorry, you remember Liz Gunn, right?
No.
Okay, so hold on a second. I'm even blanking on the name of the political party that Liz Gunn came up with. So we had a lot of these. I guess the lesson here is in broadcasting, there are just a lot of good, talented people that are, speak well. You know, they're quote what's known as talent. You know, and whether that's their, again, ability to perform well live on air or whatever. And so there's possibly not some kind of overarching sort of ethical commitment to, whatever, the sort of Woodward and Bernstein mythology of journalism. It's just, hey, they perform well on live air. But yeah, we did have, a Peter Williams, a Liz Gunn, and Sean Plunkett essentially get very pilled during the sort of politics in and around COVID and find that there was a real thirst and audience for essentially the ability to go be an influencer. Like, we've not really we got some micro influencers on campus and everything else, and there's probably some New Zealand influencers out
Craig
there.
Craig Daniels, I'm not sure if you've seen him.
I really don't know this space. This is my students tell me that I get some information about that. But a real thirst for sort of political content was born in the era in and around COVID. And also, I said I wouldn't mention this, but I think that the New Zealand government's response to their messaging problems fed into, I guess, the sort of Americanized view of free speech. And I don't want to go into the whole disinformation thing, but I don't think that was great policy making. It was quite reactive and fed some of the sense of persecution that people at places like Reality Check Radio and the platform really leveraged to be quite popular online. And yes, we have something like Big Hairy News, or we have a few sort of lefty counterbalances. But the thing about that side is, when it comes to things like the Taxpayers Union, Free Speech Union, well-supported, well-backed right-wing lobbies and think tanks, there's not a left-wing equivalent for that. So that's why they've been
George
able...
George Short? No, I'm kidding.
No. No. Is anyone getting some Soros bucks in Aotearoa NZ?
I would gladly sign up if that was the case. Yeah, I'd be the first to sell out. Yeah. The BSA being scrapped means there's nobody to mediate between complainants and media organizations aside from through the Voluntary Media Council. A friend of mine said we'll probably see a rise in defamation lawsuits without the BSA. Do you think that's likely?
That's a great question. Andrew Geddes gets so many questions about the sort of legal zone of this. But I think the scrapping of BSA, just to sort of step back and think historically here, we used to conceptualize the airwaves as public property. Mm. And I know that sounds like, hey, back when you were listening to your phonograph or something. No, but that was how governments, because governments are key to backstopping the rollout of whatever technology, be it UHF spectrum or fiber optic cable, right? Like, government plays a very important role in developing the sort of communications and information technology systems. And we used to have policy that was based on, well, there should be a balance of private and public interests here, which is to say, fine, we have a market-based competitive capitalist media system, but in order for you to have a broadcast license, you might have to sign up to BSA as this authority that composed of media and journalist veterans are the kinds of people that are the guardians of this public ethic, right? And the public trust. This is such a, essential concept that is on the endangered species list, if not already at sort of terminal decline here. Mm. But again, this idea that Not that there is a government censor in your newsroom, but you should take seriously the obligations and laws around, name suppression in the courts or electoral communications law, right? So that our elections and our legal system and our democracy function well. And, you know, for all the hatred of journalism, and again, when these things happen, you'll hear a Shane Jones or a David Seymour or a Winston Peters absolutely rail against journalists as if they were, Satanists or something. But, you know, in all of this sort of grand legal documents from something like the U.S. Constitution or the Declaration of the Rights of Man, like, journalists are like a protected class of labor or of an industry that, again, in all the sort of founding sort of rhetoric around freedom and democracy is this idea that journalism plays a very key role in sort of guarding and being custodians of this. Now, we can have criticisms of journalism, and I have, trust me, bro, I've published, I have all my critiques about the media industry in Aotearoa, New Zealand. We have the most heavily concentrated, like, media system in the Western world with lack of competition and everything else. But the nuking of BSA and the embrace of essentially Twitter X as the vital lifeblood of our media system is saying, how about more concentration? How about complete surrender to Silicon Valley oligarchs as effectively the thing that determines how our media system will operate? And we can talk about Elon Musk in a minute, but I can just leave it there for now.
But yes or no, we're going to see more lawsuits, do you reckon?
Sure, why not? I think that's the... Sure.
There we go. Yeah. This government, I mean, this the scrapping of the BSA sort of lines up hand in glove with this government undermining public media institutions in a very short time. You know, Luxon has refused to go on breakfast or Q&A now. They've abolished the BSA, of course. Seymour told the CEO of RNZ, Paul Thompson, that he won't be answering the call at RNZ for much longer. I mean, just how pro-market does their agenda get?
Well, pro-market is not even, I don't even think that it's about looting any public concept of media, right? Like, we had in, 18 months ago, we had the event that was known as, quote, the media or journalism apocalypse, in which essentially Warner Brothers pulled the plug on TV3 News and left us in a situation where we only had one broadcast news outlet, and that's, you know, whatever, lack of choice, lack of options, lack of competition. That would seem to be what capitalists used to regard as like a market failure, and you have sort of like industry policy to help when the market, you know, doesn't quite live up to how you might imagine this idea of competition. And there was a very brief sort of policy discussion that maybe we could have some kind of revenue sharing in which the tech, American tech platforms that cannibalize the revenue that our local media industry relies on, that there would be some way in which we could shake some money out of that to help sustain the vital institution of independent and national media. The Australian government got something like this for 3 years. They got revenue sharing. And essentially, this was reported by the New Zealand Herald, but Google lobbyists spoke directly to cabinet, and it was dead on arrival. And it was essentially like a complete surrender, and there would be no policy response from the communications minister to this kind of reality. And so that's the sort of fundamental concept here, is not just simply I don't want to think of it as pro-market, because what we're talking about is monopoly and oligarchy controlling our media system, right? And there's a real hostility here at, you know, again, Peters, Seymour, they make it their sort of banner to rail against the very concept that they would have to be scrutinized and accountable to these types of ideas. And there's a weird sort of slavish devotion to Twitter X. I guess it's not weird, because their self-interest is there on these platforms, because Elon Musk very explicitly does his best to signal boost parties of the global populist right, be they the AfD in Germany or Javier Milei in Argentina, somebody that both Seymour and Peters have, you know, met with and visited. And it's, you know, like Musk is coordinating a kind of like global right populist set of alliances that that, again, the lobbying groups that I talked about, the broadcasters and the sort of new streaming outlets that I talked about are all sort of gravitating around the North Star of Twitter X. And I'll give you a crazy example of this. Laura McClure, who's an ACT Party list MP, who has been sort of vocal in this policy space. She also, early on in this sitting of Parliament, announced a members' bill against AI deepfake pornography and revenge porn. I think I've seen that. Yeah. And she did this by... And you think, okay, cool. Like, this is sort of like something we can all agree on, that revenge porn, pornification, AI deepfake nudes, bad thing. If the ACT Party want to champion that, so be it, whatever.
Broken clock, right twice a day.
Yeah, that kind of situation. Now, this issue really came to a fore because early this year, the French government, the British government were taking lawsuits against Twitter X because its Grok AI is essentially like a mass deepfake pornification child abuse app. Like it's created millions of that egregious example. Mm. And the ACT Party and Laura McClure herself rushed to defend Twitter X. Oh, it's not about Twitter X. This is a much bigger problem somehow. So, like, this
weird
thing is very weird because they know where their bread is butter.
Yeah. Don't bite the hand that feeds. You know, folks said that the BSA is an outdated instrument from a bygone era and that it hasn't kept up with the media landscape. You mentioned before about how the Australian government got some revenue sharing from big online platforms. Is there a timeline where we could have those revenue sharing arrangements and where the BSA could be, you know, sort of regulating New Zealand-made content on online market platforms, online media platforms like Meta or Twitter?
I suppose anything is possible, but I'm I wouldn't take out a prediction market bet on that.
You wouldn't go to Kolshi on that?
No, I wouldn't go to a prediction market for anything. But no, I think, unfortunately, the way this worked in Australia was the Australian sort of like Murdoch media is powerful. So in a weird way, you got some good policy in support of kind of another media oligarchy, so like the Murdoch press. So and they didn't actually get legislation, they got voluntary compliance. So the Australian Treasury threatened a bill that then led Google and Facebook, after some very high standoffs in which Facebook essentially mass shadow banned Australian government pages, you know, vital information was choked off by Facebook, which shows you the sort of threat, right, that these systems pose over our ability to, like, you know, have our information and our democracies functioning well. And so there was a kind of voluntary compliance for 3 years, and this was happening during a time, so 2018, 2019, when there was a lot of political pressure on tech companies, and they were sort of like responding to that out of sort of like PR interests. Now, with Elon at Twitter, he's sort of like, again, he's the North Star in many fronts of saying, like, fuck it, you can just do this. You can just do all the stuff you want to do. You can just, like, fire 80% of your workforce. You can never, you know, you can replace your woke tech workers with AI. And people are feel, well, people in the tech space, from, you know, from Meta on down are feeling that. You know, that's the sort of era of tech, the relationship between tech and the state that we're in. And I think the last Labour government, there was some policy there that was okay, I guess. But there has been a complete failure by most, I suppose, centre-left governments to conceptualize and ring-fence the digital national space. And thinking about how not just getting revenue sharing from Google and Facebook, but like what types of media sharing and platform strategies could we have to like ring fence, you know, the sort of digital national interest and do it in such a way that is not whatever heavy handed and censorship driven, but is based on some kind of yes, like a BSA for digital would be like, what are the types of relationships, what are the types of new emerging voices in those spaces. I guess the reality is you'd never get a platform or a reality check radio under some sort of government umbrella because they're just hostile and it's antithetical to the ethic that's come out of here. They're more sort of in the American self-publishing, radical First Amendment at all cost sort of ideology. And again, I'm not opposed to this question of like we should celebrate and uplift free speech and all that, but it's become its own sort of weird culture war sticky wicket, if you will. So it's hard to make policy in this space because there's, again, the very idea that governments should be making policy for the public trust is so antithetical to what these people are championing.
Well, thank you for your time and coming on the program, Dr. Olivier Joutel.
My pleasure.
I do appreciate it. As always, any final thoughts or words?
I'm hearing things that this may be my last time on in the Zach era.
Yeah.
And if that is true, man, you've had a hell of an innings.
Oh,
and,
thank you.
And I've really valued and appreciated your contribution. So shout out to you, man.
Oh, thank you so much, Olivier. Honestly, that means a lot. Thank you, man.
You're welcome.
Cheers, Doc. That was Dr. Olivier Joutel talking about the government scrapping the BSA, Broadcasting Standards Authority. Coming up very shortly, we have Rosie.
That was a Radio 1 91 FM podcast. You can find more of them at r1.co.nz/podcast.